Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we continue our tradition of recapping major stories from Washington. And to help us do that, we have Peverell Squire, who is a professor of political science at the University of Iowa, co-editor of the Legislative Studies Quarterly. And Professor Squire, it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Good morning.
I know that you were recently in Wisconsin. You brought your son over to school.
Yes, my son will be a senior at the university this year, so I've spent a fair amount of time in Madison the last few years.
Uh-huh. And what did the University of Wisconsin have to offer that he couldn't get in Iowa City?
Well, he preferred to be at a university where his father wasn't on the faculty, I suspect. So.
All right. Well, you joined the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences faculty there at Iowa in 1985, and so you've been on top of politics in Iowa and elsewhere ever since.
Yes, it's... been through a number of caucus seasons at this point.
When you look at what's happened in the political campaign over the last week, what strikes you from your vantage point there in Iowa?
Well, I think we're seeing the campaign really begin to fully get engaged at this point. Obviously, the candidates have been in Iowa for a very long time during this campaign season. But as the Republicans run up to their straw poll in about a week and a half, and as the Democrats begin to interact a little bit more vigorously with one another, I think people are getting a sense that the primary season really isn't too far off.
If people would like to join this conversation, it's very simple. All they have to do, if you're in Madison, call 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Well, one of the candidates who spent a tremendous amount of time in Iowa was John Edwards. And how is the Edwards campaign stacking up at this point?
Well, Iowa is probably one of the strongest places right now for Senator Edwards. He maintained contact with the state after the 2004 election. He'd had, of course, a pretty successful our caucus season back in 2004. And so I think he is probably in a stronger position than any of his Democratic counterparts in terms of organization and contacts on the ground. And so he, in some surveys, is still leading the field here, even though he has lost a little bit of ground nationally.
He's lost the edge that he had. Of course, there are so many more candidates that he has to deal with right now, but particularly Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And how do you sort of see how they're doing in terms of favoritism with the voters?
Well, I think both Senator Clinton and Senator Obama have a celebrity that can't be matched by any of their other Democratic counterparts. And so when they come through the state, they generate a lot of media attention. They draw very big crowds. And that's hard for someone like Senator Edwards to compete against. And so although Edwards is superior in terms of organization on the ground at this point, and that's important in the caucuses, it's ground that he's beginning to lose a little bit as people focus on the solid campaigns that are being conducted by Clinton and Obama.
As far as spending goes, how are Clinton and Obama doing in comparison to what John Edwards has been able to spend?
Well, at this point, none of the Democrats have really spent large sums. Governor Richardson has been on television more than anybody else, and that has boosted his ranking a little bit. But for the most part, the Democrats haven't been spending wildly. There's been greater spending probably on the Republican side.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Republicans, we would like to find out how our local candidate is doing. And with something on that, here's Steve in La Crosse. Steve, what's on your mind today?
Well, I did want to ask your guests. There's a straw poll at the Iowa State Convention for the GOP, I guess, is the event. And Tommy Thompson is having busloads of people go down there trying to whip up support in the straw poll. I was wondering how your guest thinks the Thompson campaign is doing in Iowa, both with the straw poll and the significance of that, and in the caucus itself. Does he have – it's a whole ball game for him, basically, is the strategy, I understand. And does he have any sense of how Tommy Thompson's coming across in our neighboring state?
Well, certainly Governor Thompson has spent a great deal of time here in Iowa. He has, as we would expect, had to really put most of his emphasis on Iowa. He needs to do well here, otherwise he really doesn't have prospects for continuing in the campaign. By one count, he's been here 55 days, and I noticed in our local paper he's been in Iowa City even 10 times so far during this caucus season. I think he needs to do well in the straw poll coming up in a week and a half. He needs to distinguish himself from Senator Brownback's efforts, probably from Representative Tancredo, probably Governor Huckabee as well. I think these are the people who are looking to use the Ames straw poll as a way of breaking out from that second or third tier that they've been in. It's not clear that Thompson's going to be able to do that, Governor Thompson. He certainly has worked the state hard, but he hasn't been able to really compete in terms of the money that other candidates have been able to spend. And clearly Governor Romney is going to win the straw poll and probably win it easily.
Thanks very much, Steve. We appreciate your call. And so you think that Romney has that kind of support building?
Well, he has done a very good job of putting together an organization in the state. He's worked hard in the state. He's been here not quite as much as Tommy Thompson, but he's been here as much as any of the other candidates. He spent a lot of money early in terms of television commercials, and I think for a lot of Iowa Republicans who are a little concerned about their prospects next year, they look at Romney as perhaps one of the more electable of their candidates. And so I suspect at this point, and it's really hard to tell, but I suspect that Romney is probably leading the pack, and certainly he's put enough time and money into the straw poll that I think people would be very surprised if he didn't finish first by a comfortable margin.
Mm-hmm. Somebody had called in earlier and asked, what is a straw poll? Define that for people.
Well, a straw poll is just a somewhat informal event, but here in Iowa, the Republicans use the straw poll as a fundraising event, and so you can basically buy your way into it. And they're anticipating some extraordinary number of people showing up in Ames, somewhere between 30 and 50,000 people perhaps, all of whom will be in a position to express their preferences among Republican candidates. And so the better prepared organizations will bus people in and entertain people and try to get them to cast their straw poll in favor of their candidacy. And this is sort of the first look that the media has at anybody who's actually casting anything like a ballot. And so people read a lot into the results.
Our guest is Peveril Squire, a professor of political science at the University of Iowa, co-editor of Legislative Studies Quarterly, as we look behind the political headlines today. If you'd like to join in, we have a couple of lines open in Madison at 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. Rhonda Fanning will be happy to take your call today. Let's go to Tom in East Troy next. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Ron. I've thought of this question, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners have as well. I'm personally backing, I want to call him Bin Laden now, I forgot his name.
Barack Obama?
Yes, Barack. I'm personally backing Barack myself, but I'm wondering whether or not this country is ready for a black person as president, and whether or not this country's ready for a woman as president. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Tom. Professor?
My guess is that, and this is surprising in light of American political history, I think the country probably is willing to accept either Senator Clinton or Senator Obama as a potential president. I'm sure there will be small pockets of people who resist the idea of an African-American or a woman as president. But I think for the most part, people are willing to assess these candidates based on their own merits, and certainly that's the way both campaigns have been running, trying to just present themselves as the best candidate rather than necessarily identifying themselves with a sex or race. And so I think perhaps at this level with these candidates, we've gotten beyond race and sex a little bit, although obviously until the votes get tallied, you can never be quite sure. But certainly both Senator Clinton and Senator Obama have had no trouble raising money. They'll be well-financed through the primary season. They both acquit themselves pretty well. So I think anybody who may have been uncomfortable with the idea initially may be comforted by the performance of both of these candidates.
Could you have said the same thing 10 years ago?
I suspect it would have been more difficult. And again, it depends on the candidate. You can go back even 20 years ago and look at Jesse Jackson, who actually did reasonably well in the Iowa caucuses when he ran. But I think there's probably less resistance now, and certainly in terms of their credentials, both Senator Obama and Senator Clinton can make the claim that they are as qualified as their competitors.
Let's go back to the phones to Matt in Lake Geneva next. Matt, what's on your mind today?
Oh, well, I'm thinking about the Ron Paul campaign. We don't hear much about it. I didn't really hear anything in your program so far about it, but he seems to be running a strong insurgency campaign, if you don't mind me using that term. There was a very interesting development last week where, in looking at the Federal Election Commission numbers on donations, Ron Paul got more than half of all the donations from active military, Democrat or Republican, whether they indicated, you know. And, you know, he's known as the Republican anti-war candidate. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's extremely interesting that he's doing so well with active military. And then also we saw that he had more cash on hand at the end of the second quarter than John McCain, and he actually took in more donations than Mitt Romney when you subtract the money that Romney himself is just putting from his own checking account into his campaign. It looks like the Republicans, the first-tier candidates, are actually running a little scared of Ron Paul. They're pulling out of a lot of events where they know Ron Paul is going to be because they don't want to look bad in front of this, you know, in front of this guy who is supposedly not a first-tier candidate. He's had great straw poll showings. He's been in straw polls that the Republican parties run in localities like in Utah and California, a number of Georgia counties, New Hampshire, a recent one just now in South Carolina, where he's running a strong second and sometimes even coming in first in these party straw polls.
Well, let's give the professor a chance to respond to the Paul campaign.
Well, certainly the Paul campaign has been one of the more interesting ones. When you see him in the lineup of Republican candidates, Paul is the one candidate who tends to challenge the conventional wisdom or the consensus among Republicans on a number of high-profile issues, most notably, of course, Iraq. Here in Iowa, he does not have much of an organizational presence, and it's a little hard to detect whether, in fact, there is a surge of support for Paul at this point in time. He did have a presence back here in 88 when he was running as a Libertarian for the presidential nomination, but he really hasn't put in much time and effort. And so it's hard to see exactly how he's going to do when the votes actually get tallied, but right now for the Republicans, I think there may be a sense of discomfort having to appear on the podium with him. I'm sure all of the candidates would prefer to perform in smaller groups and have a chance to get the limelight more to themselves. But certainly Paul has added to the debate, and I think for some Republicans, they're a little bit uncomfortable with that.
Matt, thank you very much. As far as the contention that Ron Paul has more cash on hand than John McCain, who would have thought that that would be the case starting off this campaign?
It is a shocking development, and in part it's driven by the fact that McCain's campaign was spending wildly, much to the detriment of his campaign appeal, which has always been about trying to be a sober spender of public money. His own money has been going out the door much too quickly. And Ron Paul has run a very inexpensive campaign. He doesn't have a lot of overhead. He doesn't have a lot of people he needs to support on his campaign payroll. And certainly because he's willing to say some things that other Republicans aren't, he's been the recipient of probably more money than he imagined he'd be able to raise.
Our guest is a political professor of political science at the University of Iowa, Peverell Squire, co-editor of Legislative Studies Quarterly. He has published 50 peer-reviewed articles and book chapters, as well as 5 books, been a Fulbright Distinguished Lecturer in 1999 and 2000, and a 2004 Collegiate Fellow in the University of Iowa College in Liberal Arts and Sciences. He will be very busy in the Iowa caucuses as they come up in the next few months, and we're happy to have him along today to provide some context to the political headlines. And we'll take more of your calls in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, in for Kathleen Dunn. Happy to have you along with us today as we talk about the news behind the headlines. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Elsewhere, toll-free at 800-642-1234. Our guest is Peverell Squire, professor of political science at the University of Iowa. And let's go to Mike next in Appleton. Mike, what can we do for you?
Yeah, good morning. Here's a tough one for you, Professor. Based on your experience, if you had to make an assessment, who will be the Democratic nominee, who will be the Republican nominee, and who will be president?
Tough questions all at this point in time. It's a little hard to make those forecasts. I'd say right now, given the trends that are developing on the Republican side, it's a little hard to forecast exactly who the nominee is going to be. I would think Romney's probably going to be the best positioned coming out of the early events, and he may be able to use success in Iowa and New Hampshire as a way of rolling on to the nomination. On the Democratic side, I think probably Senator Clinton will end up with the nomination. She's run a very solid campaign. She's very good in the debates. She doesn't look like she's apt to make a mistake. But again, events can intrude that we don't anticipate that could upset either of those two candidates. And if it comes down to Romney and Clinton next November, at given trends right now, certainly the Democrat ought to have the upper hand. But again, the world has a way of unfolding in ways that we can't anticipate, and things might happen that improve the Republicans' prospects beyond what we see right now. But my guess, if I had to bet at this point, it would probably be Clinton against Romney. And that would be a very interesting matchup given their backgrounds.
What would be the strongest combination of candidates for the presidency if Senator Clinton were to win a nomination? Is it Clinton-Obama? Is it Clinton-Edwards? Is it Clinton-somebody else?
Well, I think obviously for the Democrats, many of them would like to see something along the lines of Clinton-Obama. Not just for the novelty of having a woman and an African-American, but they would seem to balance each other pretty well. Looking at Senator Clinton when she gives a talk, she's very methodical, very clear in her position, but she's not exactly a great public speaker. She's a lot better than she used to be, but when you see her next to her husband, for example, which is an unfair comparison because he happens to be terrific at this, you know, she doesn't quite connect with people the way that that her husband does. Senator Obama does connect well, and he does speak in a little bit different way and a little bit different tone, and they would probably be a good pairing. You might also see Governor Richardson on a ticket with Senator Clinton, and of course, as a Hispanic American, he would bring something new to the campaign as well. So the Democrats have a lot of prospects, and my thinking is Democrats are probably more comfortable with their set of candidates than Republicans are at this point in time.
When you look at the Republican side, and if Governor Romney were to get the nomination, is a Romney Giuliani necessarily the strongest ticket that they could put up?
Probably not. My guess is if Governor Romney goes on and gets the nomination, that he'll want to put somebody on the ticket who probably has clear credentials on the conservative side. I think some Republican conservatives are a little uncomfortable with both Giuliani and Romney in terms of how committed they are to conservative principles. And my guess is they would probably want a staunch conservative to balance that ticket.
Who would that be? Fred Thompson?
Fred Thompson, perhaps, although it's not clear yet that he's willing to really campaign at the level you need to have somebody in a presidential race. It may be somebody who's not in the contest at this point in time. And they, again, have a fairly strong bench in terms of potential vice presidential nominees. So I'm not sure whether any Republican has thought seriously along those lines yet. But my guess is if they do go for one of the more moderate candidates in the presidential field, that there will be a strong candidate to balance them, a strong conservative to balance them.
In terms of in Iowa, support for presidential policies on the war, is there a 70-30 margin, 65-35, or can you place that?
Well, my guess is that a clear majority of Iowans would like to get out of Iraq, and the question is how quickly you disengage. I think there are a lot of Republicans, however, who are willing to support the president's position. And so Republican candidates in Iowa have had to take a fairly hard line in support of the administration as a way of appealing to the people who are likely to show up on caucus night. And the problem for them is, of course, once they've taken that position, if the war is still going badly and we're still fully engaged in it next summer, next fall, it's going to be hard for them to maneuver back to the middle again and make a competitive race for Iowa, Wisconsin, Missouri, any of these states in the Midwest that are going to be toss-ups. And so I think Republicans right now are probably nervous because their nomination campaign's pulling their candidates so far to the right that it may be very difficult for them to get back to the middle in time for the general election.
Mike, thanks for bringing up that topic. And if you'd like to join in, we have a couple of lines open. In Madison, the number is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's 800-642-1234 as we talk with Peveril Squire, professor of political science at the University of Iowa. You did lots of interviews in 2004 leading into the Iowa caucuses and the elections then. Are you getting the same sort of attraction from the networks and from Iowa stations there about their interest in what's going on?
I think there's been a lot of attention given to the nomination process and what's going on in Iowa so far, and it started probably much earlier this time around than it had in previous cycles. Certainly, the candidates have been here in large numbers for many months. The candidates have been running ads much earlier than they have in the past. And I think there is a level of interest in this upcoming campaign that we haven't seen for some time. So my guess is that it's not just the media that will be interested in what's going to happen next, well, we hope in January next year, and that there will, in fact, be a fairly large turnout of Iowans at the caucuses.
Do you also follow the congressional races in your expertise as a political scientist?
Right, yes.
Do you see the Democratic majority in the House of Representatives continuing, growing, falling? What do you see happening there?
Well, I think they have a small margin at this point that they enjoy. They don't really control the House by a very comfortable number of seats. And I think their majority is a little bit more precarious than a lot of people suspect at this point. They won a number of seats this last time around that they're going to have to work hard to defend.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing that Democrats have going for them is they're probably recruiting better candidates right now than the Republicans are. I think Republicans are a little bit dispirited and looking ahead, aren't sure that they're going to be able to win on a number of places that they might have thought they were going to hold on to in the last couple of years. And so I think we're going to see an outcome in 2008 where the Democrats probably hold both the House and the Senate, but don't add too many seats in either of those chambers.
Let's go to Patty in Rice Lake next. Hello, Patty. What's on your mind?
Yes, good morning. I guess I'm playing a little bit of devil.
Patty, you're cutting out, and so we are unable to assess your full question, but I think that what you wanted to say is that we need to spend less time talking about the polls and more about the issues of the campaigns. And there's you really can't argue with that point. When you look at the issues, Professor Squire, they're pretty much the same as they were 4 years ago. You know, you're talking about the war, health care, those kinds of things, or do you see anything changing?
I don't think so. I think we're going to be focused on basically the same set of issues that we've been focused on for some time, with, of course, the war evolving as an issue to the point where now it's a question on the Democratic side of how quickly do we exit. And on the Republican side, they're trying to grapple for some position where they can appear to be supportive of the president, but yet leave themselves the option of appearing like they do want to disengage quickly as well. And I think we have had a fair amount of attention to the issue. Certainly, we've had already a number of debates among the candidates, probably more than we've ever seen to this point in the campaign cycle. And so I think there has been a fair amount of attention on issues, but I suspect what's going to drive the race on both sides is that the Democrats, of course, are desperate to regain the White House. Republicans are hoping very hard to hold on to it. And so I think electability is probably going to play a bigger role than most people would admit. I think both sides are going to try to figure out which candidate they can put up will have the best chance of winning the White House. And so issues may get set aside a little bit in terms of trying to figure out which candidate might be the most electable.
The focus on Iowa has changed a little bit in that election laws are now sort of coincided to push everybody's primaries up as early as possible. Have you noticed a fallout as a result of that?
Well, it's been kind of interesting. We right now have the caucuses scheduled for January 14th, but there is, of course, the prospect that if New Hampshire changes their date to make it earlier, that Iowa will then have to change theirs as well to keep in front. And so it may be that the caucuses are held on January 7th, it could be, and this is inconceivable to me, but it's a possibility, that we even have the caucuses next December. And so the great uncertainty about this campaign is, as every state has sort of played around with scheduling its primary or caucus event, we have pushed it earlier and earlier. So right now we have a terrific front loading with a large number of states on February 5th. Iowa, assuming it maintains its position at the front of the pack, probably will get even more attention this time around than it has previously, simply because with so many events coming so quickly after the first couple of events, there's no time for any candidate to really recover from a poor performance. So everybody's going to have to bank on doing well in Iowa and New Hampshire and perhaps even in Nevada and South Carolina, the other two states that the Democrats have tried to put up front.
Elaborate just a bit on the straw poll. It takes place during the Republican convention, the GOP convention, the
right.
state convention. And when is that scheduled?
It's scheduled for August 11th. That's in Ames at the Iowa State University. This is something they've done a number of times. You might remember back to 1999. It got a great deal of attention. And it was the first place, really, that George Bush was able to demonstrate his strength as a candidate on mm-hmm. the Republican side. And so there had been expectation that everybody would compete as hard as they could to try to do well in the straw polls as a way of building momentum towards the caucuses. Giuliani and McCain have both, of course, withdrawn their participation from the straw poll, which has taken some of its luster off. But a lot of the second and third tier candidates are looking at doing well here as a way of distinguishing themselves from the rest of the pack. And so we'll have Governor Romney, we'll have a host of other Republican candidates all trying to use this straw poll as just a way of demonstrating that either they are clearly the front runner or that they're emerging out of this pack of people who have been pretty much forgotten for much of the campaign.
Okay. Let's go to the phones again and to Scott in Madison. Scott, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to, I had heard that Romney had, his campaign had not been making much of an issue of or saying much about the Massachusetts health plan that he at least signed off on and I guess was partially responsible for. Do you, has that changed, do you know? And if not, why do you suppose it is that he is not making trying to take more credit for that, I guess I'd say?
Well, it puts Governor Romney in an interesting position. He did have a leading role in putting this health plan together. He did tout it when it passed. It is something novel, and we'll see whether the experiment works, but it is a serious attempt to try to insure more people than had been insured in Massachusetts. And I think Governor Romney, should he become the nominee, will trot this out in the general election as something he can really push and take credit for. But among Republicans, particularly conservative Republicans who are more active in this process early in the campaign cycle than other Republicans, I think he's worried that it looks like too much government intrusion into health care for the taste of conservative Republicans, and therefore he'd rather not talk about it. He will say nice things about it when pushed, but it's not something that he has really chosen to really build his campaign around.
Scott, thanks very much for your call. We appreciate hearing from you. If you'd like to join in, we have some lines open in Madison at 263-1890. Otherwise, 800-642-1234. Of course, that's toll-free. Professor Squire, how do you assess the candidacy of Fred Thompson? You intimated that he may not be willing to go through the arduous schedule of campaigning that would be required, but he still remains, his name remains quite popular in the polls.
Well, I think it suggests that a lot of Republicans aren't comfortable with their current set of choices and would like to have somebody who has perhaps some appeal along the lines of a Ronald Reagan enter the race. And Fred Thompson does have a very appealing public persona. He's sort of calm, confident. He has a nice deep voice. He's able to project an image that people feel comfortable with and secure with. The problem is that it's not clear that he's really willing to run the kind of campaign that we assume most presidential candidates have to run to get the nomination and to win. And indeed, he's, you know, been talking about running for a number of months now, and he keeps delaying his entry in part to allow his reruns of Law and Order to continue so that his co-stars can reap the residuals. and also because he isn't as big a target out of the race as he will be once he gets into it. And so right now he's doing better as a potential candidate than he might be doing as a real candidate. And so I think he wants to wait as long as possible before getting into the race. And then we'll see at that point when he really starts having to explain his positions and when he has to stand next to the other candidates and when the other candidates can begin to raise some doubts about his candidacy, whether in fact he's as strong as he appears to be right now.
To Ron in Madison next. Ron, what's on your mind?
Thanks. As a dropout from a political science graduate program, I'd like to ask the professor to please put aside your Iowa hat and just analyze this as a political science professional. I believe that Iowa and New Hampshire have had far too much power in presidential selection for at least the past 32 years since Jimmy Carter used Iowa as his launching pad. Iowa and New Hampshire are very white, overwhelmingly dominated by Northern European descendants, and therefore are unrepresentative of the United States as a whole, and that we need to share the choice with many other places and not just these two lily-white small states. Thanks.
Let me give sort of a two-part answer to this. And the first part is, my guess is looking ahead to 2012, given the way this particular process has changed over the last 4 years, that I think it's probably unlikely that Iowa and New Hampshire will continue to have their prime positions at the front of the process by 2012. I think both parties will probably begin to reassess how they go about doing this, because potentially we're looking at a sort of a train wreck in terms of the nomination process this next year, given that it may all be decided by early February. And I think a lot of people are going to wonder whether it's worked well at that point. Having said that, Iowa's position in the process is an interesting one. If we were to design a system from scratch, I don't think anybody would choose to put Iowa or New Hampshire up front. Iowa moved to the front of the line purely by accident in 1972, although political leaders in Iowa discovered it was probably a good thing to be up front, and so they worked very hard to make them first again in 1976, and that's when Jimmy Carter seized on them and used the caucuses as a way to get to the White House. I think in Iowa's defense, it is not demographically representative of the rest of the country, but when you look at the choices Iowans have made over time, they tend to be pretty reflective of what the nation as a whole is thinking, both on the Republican side and the Democratic side. I think in terms of issues, you can watch The West Wing, and they think of ethanol as being the only thing Iowans think about and have impressed on the rest of the nation. And I think ethanol is probably the only issue where Iowa's really talked more about it in previous races than the rest of the issue agenda that the rest of the country is concerned with. So Iowans are concerned with health care and Iraq and all those things that everybody else thinks matters. And so I think if anybody has to go first, Iowans have performed the role pretty well. But my guess is, looking ahead to 2012, certainly there will be a lot of pressure on the Democratic side, as there has been over the last couple of elections, to change the process. And maybe if things don't go as well as Democrats would like this time around, there will be another serious effort, as there was between 68 and 72, to change the process. And they may try to rationalize it again in some different fashion than what we've seen over the last couple of decades.
Ron, thanks very much for the call and the questions. And if you'd like to join in, we have a couple of lines open for you. In Madison, the number is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234 as we talk about the political headlines with Peveril Squire, professor of political science at the University of Iowa. I'm Jim Packard, in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today. Let me just give you a hint of what's coming up in the next hour. We'll be talking about water and the lack of it. We'll be talking with the author of Not a Drop to Drink, America's Water Crisis, and What You Can Do. But right now, we continue to search behind the political headlines for the news. Our guest, Peveril Squire, professor of political science at the University of Iowa. We've talked about a few of the candidates, and there are other names that come up that haven't gotten mentioned. Joe Biden. What do you hear or see of Joe Biden?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Joe Biden has actually put a lot of time into Iowa. But he has not been able to really show much in terms of support in the surveys that are taken. And I think the real problem Biden faces is that I suspect most Democrats don't look at him and think that he is electable in the November campaign. Certainly, he talks more and probably as intelligently as anybody about foreign policy issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many Iowans probably see him as perhaps a Secretary of State rather than a president. And so he, along with a couple of other Democrats, really haven't been able to break out of that that second tier. Maybe Governor Richardson is the one that will escape that pack and be able to challenge the top three Democrats. But at this point, when you look at Biden, when you look at Senator Dodd, you really don't see candidates who have had any success in gaining traction at this point.
Has Dennis Kucinich's campaign done better this time than it did 4 years ago?
It hasn't really changed much, and I suspect his appeal is the same now as it was back in 2004. And that when you go to the caucuses on caucus night, you will see very liberal, very activist Democrats who rally to his support. But I think the vast majority of Democrats don't see him as electable and therefore don't really seriously think about supporting him.
Let's talk about Sam Brownback for a minute.
Senator Brownback is, of course, from Kansas. He has a background where he's able to go into lots of rural parts of Iowa and connect pretty well with Iowans. And certainly he's a conservative evangelical Republican who has an entree into that community in the Republican Party here in Iowa, which is a significant component of Republicans in this state. And so he has probably better prospects here than he has elsewhere. But again, his problem is that he hasn't been able to convince people that he's a serious contender for the nomination. So a lot of Iowa Republicans may be sympathetic to his positions, but they're looking at other candidates who they think have a better chance of getting the nomination and potentially winning in November.
Let's take another tack. Go to Carl in Madison. Carl, hi.
Hi. Mr. Packard and Professor Squares, last Thursday and Friday night I spent 3 hours each on the Internet reading up on inherent contempt. I had heard about it a couple of times in recent days. I thought it was a boogeyman or some kind of a flaky thing. But in fact, it's well rooted in the Constitution, as you well know. And my question is this, regardless of how comfortable you feel constitutionally discussing inherent contempt, how do you think, if it comes to that, and I'm talking about in the case of Gonzalez and you know, the other subpoenas that have been issued to other members of the administration, how do you think it would play politically? Can you speculate on that?
My guess is that as you get more esoteric in terms of constitutional procedures, it probably will play less and less well with the public. That is, I think it's not just Democrats, but a number of Republicans have a lot of grievances with Attorney General Gonzalez in particular. But I suspect what we're going to see on both sides is people playing out the clock, that the Democrats will use this as an issue to raise doubts about Republicans and whether they ought to be in a position to govern. And Republicans are simply going to say that they'll just write it out and hope that by next summer, when everybody is fully focused on the presidential race, that what's going on in Congress and that the debates between Congress and the White House will recede in terms of public view. And so my guess is we probably won't see any resolution of these fairly significant constitutional issues that are being raised either in relation in negotiations between the White House and Congress or if these things were to push through into the courts. I just don't think anything will be resolved by the time the next administration comes in.
Carl, thank you very much for your call. Steve in Madison has been waiting. Let's go to him next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I just had two questions for the professor. Basically, it was about the electability of, I look at the top three candidates. I'm right off the top, I'll say I'm an Edwards supporter, but I was just wondering what he thought about just the electability. If you look at it, just don't look at what each one of them stands for. I hate to be cynical, and this is not the way I look at it. I don't care what race or gender anyone is, but and I'll support whoever the Democratic nominee is. But I'm just looking at, you know, Hillary Clinton, a woman. I don't think there's enough people in the country who are still going to support a woman for president. Not only that, she's a Clinton, and that's just very divisive, as we all know what happened with her husband. And then Obama being, people say, well, he's part black, but He comes, and most people refer to him as being African-American. I just don't think most people are going to vote for an African-American in this country for president. I hate to say that. You look at John Edwards, he's the typical, you know, white male that, you know, you hear people going, great, another, you know, white guy, but he's Southern, you know, that does a lot like we saw with Jimmy Carter. And then my other question is what does he think about John Edwards' views about gay marriage? I know that he believes in civil unions and all rights and no discrimination. I was wondering how much he thought that mattered as far as him getting elected.
Well, cool. Let's take the electability issue first, and I think this is paramount among the Democrats right now. I think they want to select somebody this time around who they think can take advantage of what seems to be a very positive political environment for Democrats and can win. And certainly there are doubts that can be raised about each of the three leading Democrats, as the caller suggested. There are things that people might have reservations about them. My guess is this very long campaign that we're sort of enjoying or suffering through, depending on your perspective right now, is probably working to the benefit of Senator Clinton and Senator Obama. I think the longer that they're out there talking about issues, the more comfortable people are with seeing them as potential presidents. I think this is particularly the case for Senator Clinton. She came into this race with extraordinarily high negatives, and there is a very significant chunk of the American public who simply will never consider her as a potential candidate for president. They will simply vote against her. But I think she has gotten to the point now where she could probably go into the general election and secure a majority simply because there are people now who have had enough time to think about her as a president that she is able to convince them that she has the skills necessary. Senator Obama, of course, hasn't been in the limelight to the same extent. He's made some mistakes even recently that you expect sort of a rookie candidate to make. But again, he's a very good public speaker, and he projects himself well. Senator Edwards, who is extraordinarily good in smaller settings, probably has not done as well in this campaign as I might have thought he would do. Certainly has issues to talk about. He's focused more on poverty than anybody else has in this race and has talked very intelligently about it. He's talked intelligently about health care. The question, again, is whether people see him as somebody who can connect well with voters, and we'll see whether, in fact, Democrats think he's connecting well or not. And so I think as you sort of survey the field, there are always reasons to think that there are problems that each of these candidates brings, both in the Republican and Democratic side. And so I think the one benefit of this long campaign is we'll have a better sense of who's really a strong candidate by the time we get around to voting. And then there was a second question about Edwards, and at this point I've forgotten what it was.
It was his advocacy or his point on gay marriage.
Right. This is an issue that I think Democrats would love to have play a very secondary role. I don't think they want to talk a lot about gay marriage. Certainly, in terms of the Democratic electorate, the people who are going to participate in the primaries and in the caucuses tend to be much more comfortable with the idea of gay marriage than perhaps the electorate at large. And so Senator Edwards, who seemed to be a little bit reluctant on gay rights in terms of some of his own comments, has had his wife come out and speak much more forcefully in favor of gay marriage. And I think Democrats want to leave the impression, certainly, that they're supportive of gay marriage, but I don't think it's an issue that they really want to talk a great deal about.
Mm-hmm. Steve, thank you so much for your call. Our guest is Professor Peverell Squire, a professor of political science at the University of Iowa. And let's go to Gary next in Oshkosh. Hi, Gary. What's on your mind today?
I'd like your guest's opinion on what the Christian right is going to do with Romney's Mormonism. Within the, you know, conservative evangelical movement, a lot of Christians, although the values of Mormonism line up well, the theology doesn't, and a lot of conservative evangelicals view Mormonism as not just another denomination, but just short of a cult. And I'd like to know, what do you think the Christian right's going to do with that?
All right.
My guess is if Governor Romney becomes the nominee, that the vast majority of conservative evangelical Republicans will fall in line and support him. I think there will be some people who are clearly uncomfortable with the notion of a Mormon becoming president, that they'll have concerns about certain theological positions that the Mormon Church has taken. But I don't think that they will be willing to stand aside and see a much more liberal Democrat get elected president rather than a conservative Republican. And so I think, and this is true on both sides of the aisle, come next November, most Democrats are going to vote for the Democrat regardless of who the nominee is, and I think most Republicans will line up behind the Republican candidate regardless of who it may be. I think certainly if Giuliani gets the nomination, there will be a lot of Republicans who are going to have to swallow hard before they cast a ballot for him, because he will on many issues be more moderate or liberal than they are. But I think when push comes to shove, people are going to vote for their party preference.
I was trying to recall whether Governor Romney's father, also Governor Romney, had difficulties with Mormonism in his campaign, which was derailed with his comments about Vietnam.
Right. He was the brainwashed
in Vietnam.
Did in his father's candidacy. And from my looking back over the record, it doesn't appear that Mormonism was really raised much as an issue. Now, maybe if Governor Romney, the senior, had progressed further in the campaign, it would have surfaced as an issue. But at the point where he was washed out of the race, it really hadn't been raised much. And so I think we've talked more about it, at least more openly about it, this time around than back in 1968.
Gary, thank you so much for your call as we talk with Professor Peverell Squire. Let's go to Suze in Williams Bay next. Hi.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I wanted to quickly go back to what the professor said about the support of Ron Paul in Iowa. And it relates to the forum that the Iowans for Tax Relief put up and did not invite Ron Paul. And you, I think you all have heard that Ron Paul staged his own meeting there. And that meeting was attended by many, many, many more people than came to this forum there in Iowa. And what we know here, we are part of the Ron Paul effort. There are many people in Iowa that are for Ron Paul. And you wait and see August 11 for the straw poll. We certainly are going there from Wisconsin to support Ron Paul.
Well, it will be interesting to see. Ron Paul has spent very little time in the state. And that is in keeping with his campaign. He's not campaigning like most of the other Republicans. And we'll see what sort of support surfaces. The straw poll will give us one indication among Republican activists where their support will be found. There's also a cautionary note I should give people. We have had a number of surveys taken here in Iowa, and they provide some useful information. It's very hard to tell at this point who's going to actually show up on caucus night. And, of course, participating in a caucus requires more time and effort than participating in a primary election. You know, there's a certain time at night you've got to go out, and so we'll be in January where, you know, it's not going to be a balmy night. So, it does take some time and commitment to participate, a little less on the Republican side because they just vote and then they can leave. On the Democratic side, you've got to talk about things for a while and go through a little bit more complicated voting procedure. But right now, when you look at surveys, it's very hard to put into place a filter that will actually get you people who are going to show up on caucus night. So you'll see surveys that give you somewhat different results. Right now, we have some idea from these surveys. They're fairly consistent. But as a prediction of what's going to actually happen on caucus night, you really can't have too much confidence in these surveys yet.
Suze, thank you, sir, for your call. And on to Mike in Portage. Mike, what can we do for you?
Yeah, good morning. The Comptroller General of the U.S., David Walker, is doing a thing called a fiscal wake-up tour. He's been to Iowa once. He's coming again, I think, just before the caucus in January. He's trying to alert the nation about the impending, you know, catastrophic consequences of the entitlement spending. Essentially, the wheels are coming off in about 13 years when federal spending is 100% committed to entitlements and interest on the debt. When you watch these debates, listen to the candidates, virtually none of them are talking to this issue. It's been called the dirtiest little secret in Washington, you know, the fact that the federal government's going broke in about 13 years.
Mike, we're running out of time, so I'm just going to ask the professor to jump in here.
This is a big issue. Certainly, we can quibble about what the forecasts show and when, at what point, the Social Security Trust Fund has to be raided and what that means in terms of how the general budget has to be financing benefits for Social Security and for even more immediately Medicare. But the problem that is raised is a big one. We do have a large group of people who are going to be retiring in the next decade, next two decades, The candidates allude to this. Nobody is pretending that it's not coming, but it's not one of the issues that anybody wants to talk about. Whoever wins the White House in 2008 is going to enter the White House in 2009, knowing that they have to tackle this, and they probably will have 2 years between 2009 and 2011 to get something done to prepare us for this impending financial situation. And my guess is they'll concoct some sort of bipartisan commission where both parties can hold hands and jump over the cliff together.
Mike, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate hearing from you. What did you think of the YouTube debate with the Democrats last week?
I thought it was a little curious. I know it's gotten fairly positive reviews. I was less enthused about it. It's a little hard to take it seriously to have sock puppets asking questions of presidential candidates. But to the extent that it brought some people into the process who might not otherwise have been in the process, it may be a good thing.
Professor Peverill, Esquire, it's a pleasure to have you with us for the past hour, and we'll look forward to a repeat visit down the road.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much. Peverill Esquire is a professor of political science at the University of Iowa in Iowa City. He is the co-editor of Legislative Studies Quarterly, and he's been providing analysis here. You can get more if you Google Legislative Studies Quarterly to find more of his writings. And, of course, he's quoted very much as well. I'm Jim Packard. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.